A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 18. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about Jekyll, the 2007 BBC miniseries. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon in England. As Brian said, Jekyll was a BBC miniseries, and I think it's the most recent show that we've discussed on British Invaders, because it came out in 2007. And it's very much set up as a sequel to Robert Louis Stevenson's classic novella from 1886, which was called The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, although I think everybody just calls it Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde usually. Although it was set out as a sequel, I think it also contains elements of an adaptation of the story as well. So we'll see lots of the features of the original Jekyll and Hyde story as we go along. And we'll start with our main character, who's a chap called Dr. Tom Jackman. When we first meet him, we learn he's struggling to control the dark side of his personality. And in order to help him study what's going on and also help him control what's going on, he recruits a young psychiatric nurse who's going to supervise and study him. And that's pretty much how the story kicks off.
Which is one of the things that makes this different from the classic Robert Louis Stevenson novella, in that the story starts when things are already in motion. Dr. Jackman already has this alter ego who is coming to the surface and becomes known as Mr. Hyde. And that makes things a little bit different. Another major difference between Jekyll and the original story is that all of the characters in this series are completely aware of the novella, The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and the various movies that were made of it and so on, and references to those are made. It's with this that at the beginning, Dr. Jackman is just someone with this problem, and as it evolves, references to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde are made, the alter ego finds out about it and starts to call himself Hyde. Beyond that, we find out that Dr. Henry Jekyll was actually a real person, and he was a friend of Robert Louis Stevenson, and the book was based on something real, and there is a connection that develops between Dr. Henry Jekyll from the late 1800s and Tom Jackman in the early 21st century.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. As you say, they all talk about the book, and as even as you said, there's a scene where a couple of the characters are actually discussing their favourite version, their favourite film versions of the Jekyll and Hyde story. We should talk about the characters. As we've said, we've mentioned Dr. Tom Jackman, who's the main character, who when we meet him, he's some sort of research scientist. He's a chap in his 40s. I don't think we quite learn exactly what his job was, because when we meet him at the start of the series, he's already quit his job in order to concentrate on this new aspect of his personality that's emerged. And in classic Jekyll and Hyde fashion, both roles were played by the same actor, a chap called James Nesbitt. British listeners will need no introduction to him because he's exceedingly popular on British TV. I don't know if he's done much in America.
I haven't seen much of him over here in North America.
No, he's hugely popular here. He has an amazingly successful reputation for his various appearances.
The other character who is introduced very early in the story is Claire Jackman, the wife of Tom Jackman. She is an interesting character in that she starts as the sympathetic character, and she has just become estranged from her husband. Tom Jackman has basically left Claire and their two sons. She doesn't know why. They were quite happy. And of course, because of this situation with the alter ego starting to emerge, he has left her, and that leaves her confused, but she's still the sympathetic character. As the story goes on, we learn that she is a very strong character. In some ways, the story almost revolves around her as much as it does around Jackman and Hyde. Certainly, the relationship between the two of them, or the three of them, and what she does as a result is very key.
And she's great, isn't she?
Yes.
Claire Jackman. And it's quite interesting because when it starts, she basically thinks that Tom Jackman, her husband, is having his midlife crisis. Which, of course, he is, in a way, but not in the traditional fashion.
It's quite some crisis, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, Claire Jackman was played by Gina Bellman, who I think is best known from Coupling, the British comedy series. She plays this role very well, steps from that comedy side into some pretty serious drama, and does it very well. Another one of the major female characters in this is Catherine Reimer. She is the young psychiatric nurse that is hired by Tom Jackman at the very beginning of the story. She, in some ways, plays a key role in that she is the one who is closest to the Jackman and Hyde or Jekyll and Hyde situation that is developing more and more as things go on. The story begins where Tom already knows about the situation and he's already separated from Claire, and he has now just hired this woman, Catherine Reimer, to assist him in dealing with the situation. She is played by Michelle Ryan, who went on shortly after to play the new Bionic Woman in the American series.
And I have to say, they're both terribly attractive actresses, and Gina Bellman in particular. I mean, there's several reasons, I think, to watch Jekyll, but Gina Bellman is one of them, in my humble opinion. There's some other characters we'll meet as the story goes along. We quite early on meet a friend of Tom Jackman's called Peter Syme, who's sort of his boss, or certainly he seems to be senior to him at the research institute that he was working at. I don't think it's given away too much to say that he's not quite a straightforward character, Mr. Syme. He's got a sinister aspect to his character, which we soon discover. But I think that's fairly obvious when we first meet him. And he, of course, is played by Dennis Lawson, fantastic actor, who was Wedge Antilles in the Star Wars films. I mean, he's been in loads of stuff. I'm sure Star Wars geeks will know that he's one of the pilots in the X-Wings.
The original Red, too.
There he is, yes. Who I think if I'm right, he survives all three of the original Star Wars films, doesn't he?
I think so.
Anyway, we're drifting. There's also a character called Benjamin Lennox, played by an actor called Patterson Joseph, who perhaps best known for playing a character in Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere series, which we might talk about on British Invaders in the future, where he played the Marquis de Carabas. But he plays this character, Benjamin Lennox, who's quite interesting because he's, in effect, hunting Hyde. He's pursuing the Hyde aspect of Tom Jackman's character. And in fact, I think, if I'm right, he's the character who first tells Hyde who he is. He gives him his name.
That's right, he does. And yeah, Benjamin Lennox is a great character, and Patterson Joseph just has a wonderful performance, as he usually does. Patterson Joseph is very good.
He is very good, and he always looks as if he's enjoying himself, doesn't he?
Yes. And that was something that really played into this, because he was a comic character, but he wasn't just the comic relief. He had a very serious and dark aspect and did some plot-driving things himself as well. Peter Syme, who you mentioned, was also a very good character because he's someone who always plays his cards close to his chest. And that was very clear from the beginning.
Yes, he's got a lot of secrets.
And that's something that makes things interesting here, is some of these characters are fairly complex and not what you would expect. It would have been fairly easy for them to have written some pretty generic characters, and that wasn't done, and that's nice. We also have another couple of characters in here worth mentioning. Miranda Callender and Min. These are two detectives, two women, or a detective and her assistant, depending how you look at it. And they were quite fun characters. Miranda is a very hard-driving detective, but she has a very different sort of feel than the typical detective in most of these kinds of dramas. It's very non-stereotypical, and that's kind of interesting. Min is another character who's also used for comic relief, and she's mostly a comic relief character, but she also adds an interesting balance to things. The two characters, Miranda and Min, are a couple. They're a lesbian couple. This also makes things interesting and a little different from what you would expect at first. Fenella Woolgar, who played Min, went on to play Agatha Christie in a fourth season Doctor Who episode, The Unicorn and the Wasp. And Miranda Callender was played by Mira Sial.
And she's quite good as Agatha Christie, but she's better in this. She's better in Jekyll. As you say, the pair of them are fantastic. They're great fun, these characters, and they help push the story along. And it's always quite, you know, entertaining when they turn up. I think, as you said, the whole thing about Jekyll, one of the things watching it for the second time, is that the characters are just great.
Yes, there are a number of different characters in this who could easily sustain a mini-series or a long-running series as main characters. They're fleshed out enough to be able to do that. In particular, I think Miranda and Min together would be great in the detective series.
You're quite right. The Callender Detective Agency, we'd watch it, wouldn't we?
Absolutely.
He's due at midnight. He's usually punctual.
You really need all these?
I'm not sure how strong he is.
He's stronger than you?
Yes.
Strength isn't usually a variable.
I'm sorry?
In cases like this, you don't get extra muscles or anything.
There aren't any cases like this. Please. The woman sitting opposite you is Catherine Reimer. She's a psychiatric nurse with experience in related areas. She is fully apprised of the situation, and yes, she can be trusted. If you approve, she's coming to work for us, for both of us. She won't take sides. Please consider it. We can't go on the way we've been going.
The series started out with two producers for the BBC who were looking for a supernatural project. One of the producers, Geoffrey Taylor, I think came up with the idea of doing either a remake or a sequel to Jekyll and Hyde. And he was working with a colleague called Elaine Cameron, and they're the two producers of the show. And they came up with this idea of doing something with Jekyll and Hyde, but they then obviously wanted to find a writer, and so they were looking around for somebody to take the project on.
They did very well, because the writer they ended up with was Stephen Moffat, who is one of the best television writers in Britain right now. He was the writer for Coupling, the comedy series, and he worked with Gina Bellman, who played Claire Jackman, on that as well. He has also written a number of Doctor Who episodes. In the first season of Doctor Who, he wrote The Empty Child and The Doctor Dances, a two-parter, for which he actually won the Hugo Award for Short Dramatic Presentation. In the second season, he wrote The Girl in the Fireplace, which also won the Hugo Award for Dramatic Presentation for that year. And last year, in the third season, he wrote Blink, which has been nominated for the new Hugo Awards for Short Dramatic Presentation. And for the current series of Doctor Who, which is the fourth series right now, he wrote a two-parter, which is Silence in the Library and Forest of the Dead. As we're recording, those haven't been aired yet. But it has been just recently announced that Stephen Moffat will be taking over the head writer and executive producer position on Doctor Who from Russell T. Davies, and that transfer will happen for the fifth season.
He's fantastic. I mean, you've mentioned the four Doctor Who episodes he's written so far, and they're the best four episodes from the new Doctor Who. And in particular, Blink, which you mentioned, was the best thing on television last year. It's absolutely fantastic. And if you haven't seen Blink, then do yourself a favour and go out and get it. It's a single episode of Doctor Who, which actually doesn't feature the Doctor or his companion very much at all. They're sort of minor characters in the story. It's got wit, it's got comedy, it's got mystery, and it's got the scary back in Doctor Who. It's absolutely fantastic. I'm going off topic, but I just love Blink.
Stephen Moffat is a very good writer. He took this and looked at the idea of Jekyll and Hyde and thought about doing a remake in the present day and decided that that wouldn't work because it's such a part of our culture. So he wrote this sequel that involved many of the original elements, and he added many new elements. There is a conspiracy type element that is quite strong in this. And there is also this element of an almost political relationship between Jackman and Hyde. All of this stuff gave you a very involved, complex story and some very good dialogue, and he really did a great job with this.
Jekyll was produced by the BBC, but it was a co-production again. I think a lot of modern shows seem to be. Presumably it helps with defraying the costs, because they co-produced with, I think, BBC America and a public broadcasting station in Boston, I believe.
Yes, that would be WGBH Boston. And they have been involved with British programs on co-production and on various things like that for many years now.
Right.
They've been a definite supporter. These co-production deals were definitely to support the budget, which was, from the look of the show, substantial and certainly adequate to make it work. I don't think they were involved directly in production. I think all of the hands-on production work and actually developing this was done by the BBC. And it certainly plays like a current BBC-style production.
Yeah, it looks BBC.
It was done as a serial of 6 55-minute episodes. That's actually fairly long, because the credit sequences and the title sequences were actually quite short. You have a lot of content here. That's 55-minute episodes on the DVD version, which is slightly extended. The versions that were broadcast on the BBC and various other international stations were all varying in in length and were cut in different ways, but the complete version on DVD, which I think is the version to see, is about 55 minutes for each episode.
The episodes were directed by Douglas MacKinnon, who directed the first three episodes, and he's since gone on again to Doctor Who. There's quite a lot of crossover between this show and Doctor Who, because he's just directed, I think, the Sontarans episodes in the fourth series of the new Doctor Who. And then for the last three episodes of Jekyll, a chap called Matt Lipsey took over for the direction, and he's perhaps best known for directing a comedy show in Britain called Little Britain, which is very popular and features the voice of Tom Baker, yet another Doctor Who connection.
That's right. The production was actually done in two separate blocks, so they recorded those first three episodes with Douglas MacKinnon at one time, and then there was a break of quite a number of weeks, I believe. I don't know the exact number. And they then came back and did the last three episodes with Matt Lipsey.
Which is slightly strange. I wonder if it was a production problem with people being available. But it seems perhaps unusual to split it like that. And perhaps, you know, in our next episode, when we discuss some of the production details, we might wonder the effect that has, having a different director for the last half of the story.
I suspect it was related to that, and related to the fact that it was so big, there's so much to do in this, in the length of it and the complexity of it, that they needed to divide it up between two different directors. And once they were doing that, you had their availability and so on. So it probably worked out in that way based on those types of issues.
Obviously, we've got to talk about the big thing with Jekyll and Hyde, which is the transformation, which is the main staple of the story and the legend all the way back to the book. The first episode where we've got Tom Jackman trying to understand what's happening to him and recruiting Catherine Reimer to help him study this and contain this, it sort of builds up. I mean, we know we're going to see the transformation, and about three quarters of the way through the first episode, we finally get our first view of Mr. Hyde when the transformation actually happens. And of course, in classic Jekyll and Hyde fashion, we've got the same actor doing both roles. So he has to do something to set the two characters apart. And that's obviously been done in various different ways over the years.
It was a really neat transformation because so much of it was done in the performance by James Nesbitt. Jackman and Hyde actually only look slightly different, which is quite a change from many of the other film versions and TV versions that have been done in the past. Because often they would take Dr. Jekyll as a nice, normal-looking human and then have Mr. Hyde as some funny-looking, rubber-faced monster. Well, that wasn't done here at all. It was done with basically a human-looking Mr. Hyde. He looked quite similar to Jackman. The differences were that he looked younger, he looked a little taller and thinner, the hairline was slightly different than the shape of the chin and the nose. These things were all changed a little bit, and one thing that was very key were the eyes. His eyes were almost black compared to sort of green eyes that Nesbitt had as Jackman. Seeing the change, they almost always focus on what his eyes look like, and the performance becomes very different. He walks in a different way, he moves in a different way, and he has this wonderful facial performance with the sort of evil grin of a smile, and he does a very monstrous performance rather than looking like a monster.
And he has great fun with it. Nesbitt's clearly having fun when he becomes Hyde. Although I think, as he said himself, perhaps playing Dr. Jackman was the harder role, and to make us, you know, sympathetic and understand what was going on with Tom Jackman, who himself doesn't really understand what's happening to him. But yeah, certainly with Hyde, it's a fantastic performance, and so much of it is, as you say, how he walks and how he moves, how he speaks. It's great fun.
Yes, both performances were very, very good. And the difference between the two and how it was handled by the actor and by how he was lit and how he was filmed, it gave you a very powerful sense of who these two men were.
And of course, in the original book, there's never a description of what Mr. Hyde looks like in the original book. All we're told about his appearance is that there's something that unnerves people and disturbs people. And that he looks, you know, as far as we can gather, he looks human. He's not a monster. And they've certainly stuck to that in this version, that he looks human. And as you say, he looks very similar to Tom Jackman. And lots of people make the mistake of thinking it's the same person. But there's something about Hyde that is unsettling and strange. Of course, Hyde's also, in this version, he's got considerable powers and abilities that Tom Jackman doesn't have. As we've said, he's charming. He's a ladies' man. But he's also got incredible grace and power and speed. and he can do things. He's incredibly strong. There's even one scene at the end of the first episode where we see him climbing up a wall, almost as if he was, well, it's not quite Spider-Man, but it's like he was some ape who can climb very rapidly. He can move incredibly fast. Whenever we deal with superpowers, which is basically what we've got, he's almost got superhuman strength and speed. We do get the slight problem of his power levels seem to vary from time to time to meet the demands of the story. So there are a couple of occasions where he demonstrates remarkable levels of strength, and then other occasions where he needs to be restrained or captured, where he doesn't seem to have quite the same level of strength, or he perhaps chooses not to use it, depending on what the story requires.
A lot of what he could do was based on what regular people could do, but he could do it better. So he had greater strength and speed and agility, but he was doing the same kinds of things as anyone else would do, but he was better at them. And another very large part of it was his perception. His senses were all very much heightened, that he could smell and see and hear so much more than anyone else could, and he could almost read minds.
And as you say, it's quite fun because we don't quite know what he can do. Some of the characters in the series don't know what he can do. And himself, he doesn't seem to quite know his full capabilities.
Hyde is also very much a childlike character. And this is something that is emphasized quite a bit, that he really has the mind of a child. And he refers to Jackman as Daddy. And always calls him Daddy, never calls him Tom or Jackman or anything else. The whole time, we have this feeling that he really has the mind of a child and the inhibitions of a child, certainly the emotional maturity of a child. At the same time, craves sex and is hard drinking and is doing all these things and taking advantage of everyone wherever he can. So you have this sort of abusive person who doesn't have the maturity to know what he should and shouldn't or can and can't do. And it gives you an interesting combination of the monster, not in the rubber face sense, but in the ethical sense of being a monster, but the childlike monster. Very interesting portrayal.
And at the start, when we first encounter him, Jackman and Hyde have got this sort of relationship, this sort of deal, which allows them to coexist in some form of harmony, which basically with Hyde appearing at night. And he goes off, and as Brian says, he just wants to do the things he wants to do, which is chase women and chat up attractive women and drink and have a good time.
And beat people up.
And beat people up, yes. He wants to do fighting and drinking and other things. But then as the story progresses, with Jackman finding out more of what's going on and with the bad guys starting to appear, and this organization that's hunting Hyde for some reason, then Hyde has to change. He has to become more involved with what's going on rather than just with his own
interests. Benjamin Lennox. Call me Ben. Call me whatever you like.
Mr. Hyde. You don't know to ask your name? Oh, come on. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you read that.
Do I look like a big reader?
Movies, then. Oh, those movies? You're a movie star, you know that? You've been Spencer Tracy, Michael Caine, Jack Palance, even. Who else?
John Barrymore.
Barrymore? Is that a silent?
Yes, sir.
Who cares about silence? You wondering what the hell I'm talking about?
I'm wondering about that wee window up there and if you'd fit through it at speed.
What we have here is very much a story about the dark side of someone who is basically a good person, but has this darker aspect to his character. And this is what the original book and basically every version, every Jekyll and Hyde story is about. And one of the things that was part of the original story that has been lost over time is the idea that you had someone who was a respectable person in the current society that everyone was used to. Stevenson's book was written in 1886, so it was about a Victorian gentleman, but that was at a time where the Victorian gentleman was the respectable person of the day. And what made this scary was we were taking someone who was good and respectable and the type of person that you would want to be friends with and turning him into this dark, monstrous type of person who was abusive and powerful and did all sorts of very nasty things. So Steve Moffat's approach was to say, well, that was the right thing that Stevenson did to talk about the current day. So this needs to be updated to what is now the current day. And instead of talking about 1886, talk about 2007 and a modern professional, someone who is very much in our society like the original Dr. Jekyll was in the society of the time that the book came out.
As you say, we get the very modern professional who is, you know, Tom Jackman. He's very upright. He earns a lot of money. He's got the wife and two kids, a beautiful big house. But as you say, there's also the dark side and there's the modern society. And I mean, in particular, it struck me that Tom Jackman encounters these two situations during the story of urban street crime, which he himself is powerless to deal with, but Hyde will appear. And Hyde deals with the situation in a way that I suppose modern man wishes
yes,
he could.
And he deals with the difference between the two as well, because as the series goes on, it looks into that original Jekyll a little bit as well and talks about how they connect, which was very interesting. There is a lot of primal images of power and male power in here. They make references to lions in a few cases. They make references to the Lion King, even to The Lion Sleeps Tonight at one point. And there is a sequence that involves Hyde actually going up against a number of lions in a zoo.
As part of his childlike character, Hyde likes Disney musicals. There's a point that's made that he likes the Disney musicals. So it's, as you've said, it's no surprise when we learn that his favorite one, of course, is The Lion King, which really ties into all this stuff that's
yes,
going on.
Yes, that really worked quite well. Stephen Moffat is very good at presenting all of these things and tying them all together. That just gave you something that helped raise up the intensity a little bit more. I think that covers it for the first half of our Jekyll discussion. So you can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com. or at www.britishinvaders.com. And feel free to send us your comments or questions about this show or any other show we've done, or about any other British sci-fi series that you like or want to hear about. So for this half, this is Brian from Canada signing off.
And this is Eamon from England saying goodbye.